is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 408 in the series. In this session of the radio show, we share my Talk Franklin conversation with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and marketing communications specialist, Anne Marie Tracy. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. In this session, we talk about December, closing the year of 2020 out. We talk about Think Franklin First gift cards. We talk about the recent town council meeting featuring the tax rate hearing, the Comcast contract update, and the spear phishing update. That one certainly was long awaited for. It's a long segment on the town council meeting, approximately 2 hours. And we do have that audio available separately. And we spent some time on it here without going into every single detail of that 2 hour session. We will record a session of Talk Franklin each week leading to Christmas and then take the holiday weeks off to begin again in 2021. Links to the key topics covered here are included in the show notes. The recording runs about 45 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Anne-Marie. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR-FM and here on the local Franklin area radio dial at 102.9. It's another Friday. We have another Talk Franklin session with our town administrator, Jamie Helen. Happy Friday, Jamie.
How are you, Steve?
Doing good for a Friday.
Beautiful day out.
Indeed.
It really is.
And our marketing communications specialist, Anne Marie Tracy. Anne Marie, happy Friday as well.
Happy Friday to you, Steve. It's nice out today. I'm looking forward to getting outside.
Yes. Yeah, we had to drive to an appointment early this morning, but I'm looking forward to getting out without my winter coat this afternoon to do my walking.
Exactly. I'm planning a walk at Del Cart, so that's
that's great.
yes. Yeah, because we might need the winter coat when we walk tomorrow from what we hear, right?
Yes, absolutely.
But we're not in the weather forecast business and we're doing some long form stuff here. So, but we are in December. This is the end of 2020. All of a sudden, it's kind of crept up on us. Jeez.
Now, when I sent out the newsletter on December 1st, it made me think it's the last newsletter of 2020. It feels like just yesterday I was doing January's, but happy to say bye to 2020.
Indeed. And I'm assuming you, as a marketing tool, you've seen growth in the numbers of people getting subscribing to the newsletter over the year too?
Absolutely. I get an email every week of new people who are subscribing to it, and our list has grown dramatically. I actually am almost at the point of having to upgrade our subscription to accommodate more people. So that's a good problem to have. So I'm very happy that it's reaching as many residents as it is.
Agreed, because we're both in that communication reach and spread of accuracy. So, absolutely. I do what I can to help spread that as well.
We appreciate it.
And amongst the things that you're spreading, the Think Franklin First gift cards are now on sale, and you've been getting some good sales from what I hear.
Yes, I'm so excited about this program. The gift cards went on sale on Black Friday on November 27th. So they are for sale at Dean Bank and also online at franklingiftcard.com. Dean Bank has been an incredible partner in getting this program off the ground. So we're very happy to have them also assisting with selling the gift cards locally, which we really wanted to make sure was part of the program. We feel like that was a super important piece. And the community has really embraced this. We've sold thousands of dollars worth of cards already. I'm actually anticipating that by the end of this weekend, we will be over the $10,000 mark in just a little over a week, which is for a brand new program. We're just so excited and we're so happy that the community has, like I said, really embraced it. They're accepting, warmly all of the love that's gone into putting this program together to really support our small businesses. I've been going around getting businesses ready to go. They have window clings now. They have tent cards at their checkout, mm-hmm. Which were both generously donated by Allegra. They've been a wonderful sponsor for us. And you know, just getting them comfortable with the redemption process. We're imagining that most people who are buying them as gifts. But you never know. You know, I was right. saying earlier today, I have one in my pocketbook right now that I'm going around and I'm trying to help some of the businesses just get used to it. But I'll tell you what, it's not a bad thing to have in my pocket. I'm, you know, it just makes me think, okay, what do I need and where can I buy it locally? We have 38 businesses on board already and we're working with more and just super excited about it. We're super grateful to everyone who's helped us out. Random Smile has been a huge, huge piece of getting this program off the ground. And we just are excited to help our small businesses. You know, they get 100% of the money spent. They are fully refunded for any, they're fully reimbursed, I should say, for any card spent in their location. The town is not making any money off this program. I have gotten people asking me that, and I want to make sure that that's very clear. This is not in any way a moneymaker for the town. We actually don't even touch the money in any way. We're simply trying to put forth an economic development initiative and really piggyback on all the Shop Local work that's been done by, you know, the Downtown Partnership and Shop Franklin, and just give people a you know, a way to actually physically put their money in our town. So it's just adding a layer to, like I said, all the work that's been done by so many other groups in town to really push the Shop Local, you know, the Shop Local mentality. So we appreciate all the support and I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I think it reinforces a number of points that we've talked to from time to time. Certainly it's a good cause. Buy local, Shop Franklin, however you want to say it, keep the dollars here. And you've got stats as to how much that actually stays here versus going elsewhere. So that's one good piece. With the online option for buying, then Dean Bank buying. So you've got the common accessibility to both sets of the population. If they truly want to walk in and buy the card and do that transaction that way, they can do that. If they want to do the internet pace, and whether it's a gift or for an individual purchase, they can do it on the internet. And then obviously the businesses benefit, which is really the whole piece, but it's that other coordination, collaboration, reinforcing, think Franklin first.
Exactly. And Steve, you actually brought up a good point. So another thing that people have been asking me about, so Dean Bank, there's a number of reasons why buying the cards at Dean Bank is a great idea. One, you can buy them with cash. So, you know, not right. everybody likes to use credit or debit online, which sure. we completely understand. So Dean Bank is where you buy them with cash. And if you buy them at Dean, there's no fee. You know, there's not a processing fee. So people who want to go get a $50 gift card can go to Dean with $50 and get the card there. If you buy it online, there's a $3 processing fee because it's got to get processed and mailed and sent sure. out. So yeah. just something else people might want to make note of. The program in general, it saves the program money when people buy them at Dean. So just a little plug.
yeah. And then of course the key piece that you referenced, and I'll reinforce that, I think it emphasizes the relationship of government in this collaboration role. Clearly you were in a good spot to help facilitate amongst the various groups, Downtown Partnership, Shop Franklin, Random Smile, Dean, Allegra, I'm missing somebody, but there's a whole bunch. And yet there's no dollar that goes through the town. Right.
Not Nothing. One penny goes through the town. My role in this, and I understand, you know, I work for the town, but my role is exactly how you described. It's facilitator. And then, you know, obviously I'm putting the marketing piece together and the website piece. But that's one of the reasons why we have Random Smile as our partner, because they are the ones handling the accounting, because the town does not touch one cent of it. Mm-hmm. We are simply facilitating, working with everyone to bring this program to our community.
Right. And I'm sure we'll continue to hear more of it. It had a good time to as a gift opportunity, clearly. But I mean, buying local, whether it's shop local on the Friday after Thanksgiving is other big thing. But I mean, we really should shop local every day.
Absolutely. I have money on my card because I need an inspection on Monday, and I have an appointment at Grove Street, so I'm taking it there.
Good. Absolutely. Nothing wrong with that.
So speaking of town money, the big thing, relatively the big thing this week was the tax rate setting, which formally closed out the budget hearing, budget cycle, not just budget hearing, but the budget cycle for FY21. Although at this point, at least to the extent that the state doesn't change anything else that you've got included in the calculations as it is.
Yeah, I think it's still fluid, in terms of what happens up there. But I think for the, the individual that's, listening to this, they're going to go, what tax rate? They know their tax rate, right? But, how does it get set? And Steve, you and I were talking about this offline. It's so hard to convey because it's a dense topic. But if I may, basically what we do or the assessors do is the Board of Assessors are in charge of setting the tax rate and goes to the town council for final approval. But essentially the town budget allowed under law is allowed to climb up to 2.5%. Most people know the term Prop 2.5. That's where that comes from, is that each year your annual budget appropriation, or what's called a levy, is allowed to go up 2.5%. The question did come up the other night, can it go under 2.5%? It can. But when you go under 2.5%, you have to reduce services. And so if you go over 2.5%, it's that O word nobody likes to use called the override. And that requires, a ballot initiative for the voters to be able to increase their property taxes. So in my tenure here in Franklin, as well as I believe Mr. Nutting's, overrides have traditionally in the town's history not fared very well. The taxpayers in town have pretty much frequently, all but one time, they've said live within your means. But as a kind of a side part of that deal, I know the town is also extraordinarily supportive of the town staff and the service level they get. And so there's been always this kind of atmosphere of, well, we're gonna go to 2.5%. We're not gonna go under and we're not gonna go over. Mm-hmm. And so that's really each year the benchmark we use. And it actually makes things really easy. And it makes things predictable. It provides for budget stability. And so actually in a lot of ways, not going over 2.5, but not going under 2.5 is actually right on the money. And so it's been something that I think that has worked really well for Franklin, and the council did vote this week, on the formal resolution to essentially, corroborate what I was just suggesting. And essentially what happens is when you do that 2.5% number, you then have a budget number and you live within those means. The assessors go out and evaluate properties in town, property improvements, and that is a market-based formula that is part art and part science. You cannot just decrease property values for the sake of trying to manipulate the system. This all gets certified by the state as well, by the Department of Revenue. So you have to have fair and actual cash value of an assessment of a property, which every homeowner should want because it's a significant investment in their life with equity and a whole variety of other things that we won't get into. So the tax rate ends up becoming a math issue, really, at the end of the day, based on our property value. If property values tank, tax rates generally go up. And so when people say my taxes go up every year, it's true. It's under state law that it goes up 2.5%, and it's up to the locals to decide whether they want to go above 2.5% or under 2.5%. And so the math, the tax rate ends up just becoming, really ends up becoming a calculation. And this year, the tax rate was set at $14.65, which is a mere 14 cent increase per 1,000 over last year's fiscal year, where last year the tax rate went up only one penny. In that fiscal year. So, it's kind of a big success story. When I talk to young families and parents, I will say this. The first thing, the reason why they moved to Franklin is because of the educational opportunities here and because of the schools. That's what you're going to find throughout a lot of Metro West communities. The next reason they almost frequently give me right off the bat is their tax bill is affordable and they get a lot for their money. It's astonishing. And so it's a big success story. And I think the formula Franklin's used for a while has been steady as she goes. And I think it's been very effective.
Yeah, it has. And I'll add the third piece, because the third piece to that, certainly the schools were number one, affordable house was number two, but the transportation options between 495 and the train, in my case, when I came here back in the day, I was regularly taking the train into Boston. Clearly, in my retirement, no, I'm not doing that so frequently, but those are the three key pieces. And I think, if anything, that's one of our opportunities, that the tax rate clearly shows that you are managing the budget efficiently within what you can. Granted, it goes up to the automatic 2.5, but only since, 2007 was the last operational override. It had failed a couple of times since then. The town has at least given approval for the debt exclusions, which are building related, primarily for the schools. But you're managing within the 2.5%. So that speaks to itself. And I think that kind of gets lost in some of the other discussions in terms of what's the tax rate. And yes, the taxes themselves will always go up. But the valuation, clearly from the market economy after the 2007, 2008 depression, recession, great recession, whatever they call it, the market took a tank and the rates started going up. The market values have been coming back up. So now the rate's going up less and less.
And, you know, again, I think it speaks to the stability of the town's spending, you know, which will be a conversation I'm sure, you know, some folks are going to want to have, you know, later this year. I mentioned at our department heads meeting at the council this week, you know, we're going to try to get back on track for FY22, get on the regular calendar, to get our budgets in for our departments and then for FY22 next July, and then have those meetings starting in January, and try to get back on track from the budget process that deviated a little bit, obviously, because of COVID.
Right. And the other factor too, that Chloe and we, while we recognize there are folks in Facebook that don't fully understand, and some of their conversations are not necessarily accurate by any means, they do need to recognize at some point that growth helps keep the rate the way it is. If we did not have growth, the rate would absolutely continue to increase at a greater rate than it is. So we need the growth. Obviously, it needs to be smart and in the right areas and the right market pieces. So over time, from a senior perspective, there needs to be more affordable senior housing.
Right. Smart's always in the eye of the beholder on this topic.
Right.
But it does beg the idea that if you don't have growth, that means you're standing still.
Yes.
And if you're standing still, you're not moving forward, and you're not actually trying to propel any type of activity that's going to generate revenue from really more so from a business standpoint in the community, from a job standpoint, from a money flow standpoint, from a consumer spending standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in today's era, you know, we all have our opinions on a lot of things. and we all air them on Facebook a lot of times, right?
Yeah. So
I don't, you know that.
Yes, we've talked about that.
I refuse to participate in that platform. But in all seriousness, you know, I think these are the types of meetings that you'd love to see a big audience watch. And if you're a younger family in town listening to this podcast, you know, tune in for an hour or two. You'll find out a tremendous amount of information about how your town budget works at these meetings.
Yeah, and in terms of the smart growth, we can put a segue in that the listening sessions, of which there's another one coming up later this month, and then the last one I think is still scheduled in January. That's an opportunity to work with the town and businesses, have a say at that as well as residents, to say, well, this is what we want to have happen.
That's it's next Wednesday, actually, on the 9th, and the links to the meeting are posted on the town calendar. So just so a little plug for the business listening session.
Yes. And from what I understand, because the last one had been canceled due to tech difficulty, the two agendas are really combined as one, or did you just slide it into one and then move the other one further?
We just slid the retail, personal services, and forget what the fitness into the planned December 9th meeting. So we're just going to be kind of lumping all the groups together and talking about all the different topics that would be applicable to their businesses. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, good. And we'll share that out with reminders as well, as we have, and participate as we have, because Franklin Matters. No pun intended there.
Bam.
The money shot.
That was good. That was a good one, Steve.
So the one of the other pieces of the three hearings, there was a cable contract negotiated with Comcast. And certainly from a disclosure standpoint, while we're recording as part of the Franklin TV, Franklin Public Radio, we're a beneficiary of that cable contract from the service fees that the subscribers, whether Comcast or Verizon, pay. That effectively funds our operation.
Yeah. But
there's more technical details behind the contract itself, and that was covered on the meeting.
Yeah, but actually, by federal statute, the town has to actually enter into a license agreement with every cable operator, Verizon, Charter, Comcast, you know, Spectrum, et cetera. And over years, as everybody knows, you know, cable has expanded into, you know, multiple companies. And so the town is lucky enough to have both Comcast and Verizon. I mean, I think at the end of the day, this is an agreement which really has a few pieces to it. One, it's the contract to allow a provider to come into your town. There's just under 5,000 subscribers of Comcast in Franklin. So it's a substantial portion. They're not the largest, but still, that's a fair amount of residences. And you know, we've always believed here that at least having a little competition is a good thing. You know, in the town, that in many other communities, they do not have choice. They get one provider. There's a sole source provider. And to me, that just seems, you know, not right. You know, I think at some point the question came up the other night, oh, why can't we have them all? Well, you know, those companies sometimes don't want to come if there's too much competition or whatnot. So, you know, that's just the way that goes. It's a 10-year contract through 2030. We were successful in getting a little bit higher percentage. The maximum allowed under law, 5% of those revenues will come to Franklin TV for their operations. We were also successful in getting a fairly robust capital expenditure over the next 5 years. But almost maybe more importantly, Steve, you know, if I'm a viewer and I'm out there listening to this, I get a new HD high def channel and a side letter attempting to work with us on a program guide, which I got to say is, you know, just as a viewer myself, you know, I live and breathe by DVR. Yes, I do stream too, but I kind of live and breathe by it because it's just so hard to be right in front of something when it's there. And one of the biggest gaps that I think we have is the fact that if you want to watch a program, like a town council meeting, like a finance committee meeting,
right,
like a cooking show, right? Like, sure, a lot of the other programming that goes on local cable TV, just like
PBS.
A sports game. You know, if you want to DVR it so you can watch it later, one of my best friends who lives out in Colorado DVRs like all the, like any New England sports team that's on national TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when he's able to view it, when he gets home later on, you know, he might start the game and then get up to speed halfway through or something like that. Just gives people more flexibility. I think,
sure,
it's really a, you know, a big deal that I hope we can get done for the citizens that are paying through Comcast. So it was a great agreement. You know, we're fortunate to have good people working on that stuff. I give a lot of credit to Christy Welton in my office, who spearheaded that negotiation. And you know, I know people out there just don't like, you know, utility companies. And I understand why. Cable and utilities are heavily, heavily regulated by the federal and state government. We're just the innocent bystander at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And we don't have miraculous power in these situations. Generally regulated by the federal, by the FCC. You know, I think we ended up getting a great license for our residents.
I agree. And to the extent that, as we've talked here before, clearly Franklin Matters is getting more integrated into Franklin Cable and Franklin TV, et cetera. We do have plans for that new website. So it'll be watch with all the cable channels, listen with the audio, the radio, and read, meaning the Franklin Matters news stuff. That'll be the new piece. Yep. It'll make them a much more searchable. And for those who have seen the Castus platform, which is our video on demand broadcasting piece, that's got a better channel alignment, playlist, if you will. So you can go for town council, school committee, various meeting threads, et cetera. But trying to put that piece into either Comcast and or Verizon so that now in that smart box, you've got it all in one place. You don't have to go somewhere else to get it. That will be helpful for all of our viewers.
Absolutely. Extremely helpful.
Huge. That's huge for sure. Yeah,
definitely. And then the bulk of the third hearing, or not so much hearing, but the presentation was around the spearfishing incident, which I know we've teased up a few times. You still can't talk to all the details because of the investigation, et cetera, but at least people got a better sense of what happened and what's still underway.
It's kind of tough to know where to start. I think I would actually point people who are listening and they're really interested in this and the who, why, what, where, and how. I would really encourage people to go to www.franklinma.gov, our website, and there's a link down the bottom for live stream and Franklin TV recordings of public meetings. And if you just go to the town council and click a few links into, you'll get a menu for the December 2nd council meeting. I think for a lot of people who are interested in the how did we lose this money, how much have we gotten back, how did it happen, where's the accountability, I think it'd be a really good investment of time. What, maybe 2 hours, Steve? I'm thinking it was a couple hours.
It was probably, I'm having segmented that time. Piece. It was probably about an hour and a half, because it's you also took a break before you went into the council comments. So that kind of throws it out a little bit.
Yeah, but overall, if you bookmark a couple hours and you watch it, I think
it should be within 2 hours for sure. Yes.
Really, a great segment. For me personally, this happened 8 weeks ago. It certainly consumed a large portion of my life for 7 days a week for 8 weeks. I am really proud. I know there's a lot of citizens who, certainly have the right to disagree with some of my decisions, but I don't think a lot of people do. I've been getting a tremendous amount of feedback from folks after that presentation in the last couple of days about their support for my decisions. And that stands people I've never met, people who are clearly younger families who are very savvy, people who work in this industry, who work in IT, who understand cyber attacks. This is from people who are some of our seniors in town, who've lived in town their whole life. There's a lot of dynamics to this, but as a town manager, I have a role to step back and listen to a lot of the feedback from people, which I have over the last 8 weeks, lawyers, politicians, citizens, young and old, new expertise, non-expertise, people who are biased, unbiased, people who just really are all over the place on this and wanted to share their opinion. And as I said the other night, I really thank everybody for that. And I still continue to talk to people. I spent 6 hours of my day yesterday talking to people calling me up. And the support in the town, I think, after hearing and learning about all of this and being out there, is actually quite overwhelming. And I'm happy for that for a lot of reasons. One of the things that has irked me for a long time is the constant this instantaneous gratification that people think that this whole scenario or any scenario is. I hope people appreciate respectfully the fact that I have a job to do, to listen to all the different stakeholders, listen to the attorneys, listen to the police. This isn't a politicized issue. This is some serious stuff. And I think our IT director got into that for a while at the beginning, about what the nature of cyber crime is in this country right now. And for me, as a professional, it's just, it's the worst thing in the world to sit there and have information that you feel like you can't tell people about. But I also have a job to put together essentially a game plan of how you're going to try to get the money back, how you're going to hold those accountable. It's all in the slideshow. It's online. It's on Franklin Matters. It's on the town administrator's website. I lay it out right out there for everybody. I think it would probably be overkill to go through all every detail.
No. As much as we want to do long form here, we don't want to go that far.
We don't want to go that far. Really, it's all there. I said at the meeting, I think, Steve, you'd corroborate this. I mean, I don't have anything more to offer people. You know, I in a very rare moment, you know, we discussed the accountability and the discipline, you know, that we set forth for the treasure collector. The response I have been getting from that has shown that there is a tremendous amount of support in this community for Ms. Bertone. It's clear to me that, you know, that the support is there for the punishment that's the crime. And I really would. I would encourage people who may have some interest in this to just check out the meeting. I think the meeting in particular, going to the Franklin TV to get it on replay or to look at it online, I think that's probably the best avenue. If you have a couple hours, if you only got 20 minutes, you know, or 30 minutes, the slideshow will do. But I think due to the nature of this incident and the difficulty that it has had on a lot of people's speculation in town and theories and the Facebook problem, you know, I think at the end of the day, there's a human element to all of this that is really worth, you know, watching, not just Ms. Bertone's deeply felt apology to the community, but also I think in a broader context, a lot of the risk that we all have as municipal employees in our job and the very public nature of it. A cyber attack happens to a business, and Chairman Mercer brought this up in his own experiences, did other counselors and folks. It's unbelievable the feedback I've been getting from people saying this happened to me. Yeah. This was, you know, I work in the banking industry.
Sure.
I work in an auditor's office. I over here, this happened to me, and telling me their stories over the last 2 days. And Steve, I'll say one last thing, and I think Anne Marie, both all of us will agree. This is a tremendous community filled with an unbelievably empathetic and warm citizenry. And it just, you know, if you're me, you have to hear it. You don't know it's going to come until it comes. But the tremendous amount of warmth and emails that were coming in through all hours of the day, the last 36 hours, really shows, I think, and Ms. Bertone's apology, I think really shows a lot about the social fabric of the community and the fact that a lot of people here have been really supportive of one another, and they are very understanding and they're very forgiving. So, you know, I think my mother always taught me, treat those as you want to be treated. And I know for a fact, if I was sitting in Ms. Bertone's shoes, you know, I would have wanted to be treated hopefully the same way with the same level of respect in evaluating the totality of her performance, as opposed to being marked and judging her on her worst day. And I hope that my decisions on that fit well with the community priorities and fit well with that community warmth. But everything I've heard, and she's been receiving flowers downstairs, and, you know, a lot of support from the staff unequivocally. You know, we just, as Chief Lynch pointed out, for those that are listening that may not, you know, go check things out. It's time for everybody to you know, respectfully take a deep breath, let the dark cloud move along. And as Chief Lynch really did say, this could take a long time. And the money did not leave the country on the initial misdirected payment. It did go to California. It did not go to Russia, Nigeria, England, the Czech Republic, or any of these other countries that are hotspots for a lot of cybercrime. Where the FBI would tell you if it did go to another country, just stop now. And so the investigation continues. And that's a positive slice of hope. As someone 8 weeks ago who had very little hope, I can tell you that, you know, you have a little bit more, you have a little bit more hope than we did, you know, 8 weeks ago. So I encourage people to go check it out.
I'll endorse that. I was impressed with the thoroughness of the presentation. And again, mindful that you can't say everything because things are still under, you know, investigation, et cetera. But for those who aren't aware, I spent the past, you know, 20 something years in financial services, primarily in information protection, primarily in security. So this is prevalent, as has come up in the discussion. It can happen to anybody, and you always have to be on the lookout. As an example, the games that are frequent on that other Facebook page, you know, where who, what character are you, what's your favorite color, those kinds of details are what people then use to make the approach so that they'll come to Jamie and say, oh, I know your dog is named so-and-so, et cetera. So now you have a relationship because people have some data about you that, okay, maybe they do know me, right? And yet Absolutely. It's some character actor who's got some devious stuff in mind, et cetera.
This is not the young genius in your mom's basement in New Jersey.
No.
These are corporations. Right. That are in other countries that have, incredibly sophisticated, Cold War era, tactics that are highly underground, highly specialized, extremely sophisticated. For every Jeff Bezos in the world, there's a cybercrime criminal that's equally as rich,
mm-hmm.
and. You know, for every Mark Zuckerberg, there's one on the dark web that's pulling in, you know, billions of dollars in cybercriminal revenue. I mean, yeah. We made even a joke somewhere at the meeting, you know, afterwards, like, I think I went in the wrong career. But it's as Tim Raposa eloquently said, they need to be right once. The staff needs to be right 100% of the time. I've never met a human in my life who's right 100% of the time.
No,
some people may think they want to be, but they're not.
No.
And they're not. And, yeah. and,
you know, strive to it.
And that's the human error element. I think that we're every single one of us is susceptible. And I kind of alluded to my story a little bit where I clicked on a link that Tim told me not to click on PayPal. And I almost sent a used MacBook off somewhere before Google put up a red screen and said, this is a spear phishing incident. And it prevented me from having to, you know, it was only a couple $100 computer, but
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, still I was able to not have to send that off to some foreign place that some criminal. So it was a lengthy presentation. It was a very critical presentation for me personally, telling people the truth and being honest about it and being forthright. I think and apologetic and understanding, I think certainly goes a long way. Certainly how I run things here. This was no different, but I think the response also from the town council, a lot of credit does go to them. It's easy to stand up and take this one and try to run with it, but they didn't. And I think that the feedback I got from them, and it's worth watching, I believe, for anybody that has that time to watch their response after that recess that you mentioned, Steve,
mm-hmm.
that I think listening to your elected leaders talk about this, I think is a really, really important thing. I don't think people should take it for granted. Every counselor clearly understood the situation. I think they were pleased to get all of the information out there, the questions they've been getting. And I think that I think many of them saw a moment where if they were the ones standing behind that microphone, some of them even admitted that they may not even be able to do that. So the town councilors had a lot of courage. It's hard to look in the face of a few people yelling and screaming and complaining and turn around and say a lot of the things and ask the questions that they did. And I hope anybody listening to this takes another hour or two and does go through that presentation. I thought it was, if you can have an attack like this and lose funds like this, it's a good night for the town of Franklin. I know that may sound crazy, odd, but it is a good night. And, I'm proud of what happened. I'm proud of all the people that were involved in it to put it together. And, and one more thing, Steve, that people say, oh, well, wait a minute, what about the rest of the money? They're going to see in the paper the 300K. And if you read the paper, it's a little distorted because we don't get that long view in the newspaper, although Lauren Young did a tremendous job on that story, and I give her credit all the time. She does write great pieces. But you can only tell so much in a news article. We were planned for emergencies. That's what we do. We have a safety net here. We have people that are dedicated. We have people who, when you have a situation like the clerk in September, made a colossal error. We had the people in place to debrief, turn around, focus, come up with a game plan for number 3rd and execute that game plan. We were ready for an emergency. In all likelihood, the rest of the money is probably going to come out of the Water Enterprise Fund, what I would call the rainy day account or emergency account, which we have a town policy on, which was reviewed in 2019 by the Finance Committee and the Council, to have a minimum of $1 million in emergency rainy day funds in the water or sewer account. And obviously, this was not the type of emergency that we were thinking of. We're thinking of a water main break. You're thinking of a pump station going down. You're thinking of losing electricity. You're thinking about a staffing problem, mm-hmm. like a COVID issue, something.
Yeah. Or shorted a pump station, which throws it out for a while.
That's right. but this is an emergency too.
Oh,
and
sure.
That's why we were able to claw back 40% of the money through insurance, because you have insurance for some of this.
Right.
But if the insurance isn't enough or the other options aren't there, you have a rainy day fund to tap into. And ultimately, I think that in the short term, getting the project done on Grove Street is of the utmost importance. And personally, I would like to get those bills paid as soon as possible and let the police investigation commence and see where that comes out on the other mm-hmm. end. So I just want to emphasize that. And it's not me trying to be, look at the positives, although it is. But it is an important fact that, the government here in Franklin was actually prepared for an emergency like this. And that's something that I think people should hopefully take a little mm-hmm. solace in.
Yeah, and I'll, in summarizing and closing on this, I'll second in terms of the transparency and honesty of the presentation, albeit it was 8 weeks late, but you had to let some of the story develop. It's still not done yet. Stay tuned for the rest. It may take a long time. But the other point we haven't, it's addressed in the presentation, but we haven't addressed here, is it's also a learning opportunity, because this was not really kind of the normal hack. So somebody was in the system. It was a mistake by one individual. And there are processes and procedures which you're already looking at and revising with the auditor's help in order to prevent the reoccurrence at some point in time, because unfortunately it may still happen again, although we should be positioned that it's less likely to happen.
Absolutely. It's a really great point, and I appreciate that. In that slideshow, for the folks that are listening, you will get a performance improvement plan. There's 2 or 3 slides on that, and to the wire transfer policy and some of the procedures we're revising. To see your point, people can check out, the type of stuff that we're doing on that. So, all in all, 8 weeks after this incident, to have 42% of the money restored and in a police investigation starting to make some headway, and in addition to all the other work on, should we sue, should we pull a bond, should we do this, what's the law? I mean, this is an extraordinarily complicated legal topic that you don't just do things. You have to really think them out, and you have to really get your evidence in line. You have to really do your due diligence to make sure that you're all set. Or otherwise, as I articulated the other night, you could be down a lot more money than you lost to begin with if you start just suing people for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, the image I would come up with, this is not just a chess game. This is a multi-level chess game. And if you don't think 2 or 3 rows or moves ahead of time, you just built yourself in a corner where it's going to cost you more than you just lost already. So, yeah. You got to be careful.
$300,000 is a tremendous amount of money. On the other hand, in an organization our size, it's not an insurmountable amount of money to withstand.
Right.
And it'll have no effect on services to the town, no effect on any of our employees in that department. There'll be no needed tax rate or any other increase in water rates. And And to be in that position, to have no effects and to still get the water treatment plant done, you know, I think people have to also consider that as they evaluate the totality of the situation for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And putting it in the context, this is not a Beaver Street Interceptor break by any means.
Actually, those would be more expensive.
And way more expensive. And we don't have nearly enough in the emergency funds to cover that part.
Well, you and I will be getting into the Beaver Street Interceptor at some other day in the new year. So
We shall, because that's on the radar. Well, I think we've covered a couple of really good pieces here at this point. Anything else you want to add?
Not this week. I mean, just want to thank everybody for listening. And, you know, I do want to thank all the really dozens upon dozens and dozens of citizens who have contacted me via email and phone regarding this issue, any issue, but certainly this one. And we also, this will run later, but by the time this runs, the local special town election will have happened. And so we ask everybody to look for the December 16th council meeting because there'll be a new member on that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And while we're closing December, we mentioned as we were starting this, we'll also be doing this weekly through December and then taking the Christmas week and New Year's week off. But there's enough happening as we close out the year that we can do this on a weekly basis. So I appreciate your time and effort in doing this.
Yep. Absolutely.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.